Bonjour, messieurs, dames. Je vais parler maintenant en anglais. Et merci pour les traducteurs. So it's a pleasure to be here and to talk about the Swiss statement. And it was nice to hear from somebody else such a positive reflection of the Swiss statement. I can tell you in the beginning in 2008, I had very harsh reactions. Everything actually started with a vision that Julio Montaner presented at the AIDS conference in Toronto, where he said, if we manage to treat more patients now, if we treat more patients now, they will be less infectious and will have great savings in the future. And that issue, this discussion about treatment as prevention, especially after the Swiss statement. But actually, the concept is not new. Syphilis was actually the big killer of the last century among the infectious diseases, and it killed many more people than AIDS. And it was penicillin that changed the picture. So just the availability of a treatment can change the whole epidemic. And you can also see that over the long term in the United States that syphilis really dropped. However, there is a caveat. And here on this slide, you see that the big peak is syphilis. And these two curves here is gonococcal disease. And for gonococcal disease, you also have a treatment, but it shows that prevention, that behavioral factors are also important. And I would like you keep this in mind. It's not only treatment. So this is a statement here in German. We actually did not issue it in English, and I should have placed it in a peer-reviewed journal with a citation index. It has been cited so many times. Actually, what we wanted to be clear is, with well-established art, you're not infectious. And we wanted to inform our physicians it's okay to talk to the patients and to tell them. Now, the debate, it has been said, was really very strong, and there were two types of opponents. The one said the statement is not true. It's not proven, but they also said it's not true. And the other said it's true, it may be true, but it shouldn't be told. So immediately after the statement, there was this case presented by Stürmer from Frankfurt that was presented as the Frankfurt case. It was an old case from 2001. They never published before, but it was a big discussion about it. Actually, I was a reviewer, and they started to present the case differently. When we went into the details, we found out this one partner was started his treatment, viral load went down and remained down forever. The partner was found positive here, and they said he had a partnership with also unprotected sex. They said only from here to here. But the partners, then when we looked at this HIV test that was never documented, the partner said, oh, I have been to an anonymous testing site. I called next day, and they told me I was negative. So it's not a really documented case, and nobody actually believes that this was actually a proof of transmission. When we look, then, a friend of mine have then did meta-analysis, but actually the picture was already to us very clear when we issued the statement. There were only two papers looking at partnerships where the index case was on treatment. And Overall, only the top two were on treatment, 290 index patients with no suppressed viral load. Both studies showed no transmission. And then you can calculate the upper confidence limit. That's what statisticians use to say how certain are we that our result of zero transmission is correct. Zero, if we find zero in an experiment, in a trial, depending on the number that we have tested, it, in the same trial, it could be 1.2 transmissions per 100 patient partner years. That is what this confidence limit says. So keep this in mind. It's always per 100. It's zero transmission, or the upper confidence limit here, 1.2, 1.3 per 100 patient years. Now, Jacqueline? Charlotte was talking about the 052 study. This was a randomized study where patients who were not eligible in Africa, where they were enrolled for treatment, they received either therapy or were observed. And all of them had an HIV negative partner. And after the observation time of about 5 years, the study was stopped. If somebody in the observation arm reached the treatment indication, of course they were treated. But then after the observation time, they found 27 transmission in the observation period and only one in the treatment arm. Now this is important. This one case was infected very early. It was estimated that this was on day 8 after the index case started treatment. So this is not something that we would consider a failure of treatment. It's just too early. Nobody would say that this is a safe period. So in terms of the Swiss statement, we would say on the left side, here you see the numbers of transmissions. If you have this one single case, one in 1,000 gives you 0.1 on 100 patient years. So that is if you have one transmission, but if we consider only those patients or observation time after 6 months, as we have in the Swiss statement, you would have zero transmission. So it's 100% activity. It reduces transmission by 100%. It's zero transmission. And again, now you can calculate an upper confidence limit, which is about 0.3. A recent meta-analysis has looked at all the studies so far published. And in all these studies, you find this, again, this upper limit. All studies showed no transmission during heart. And the upper limit really always depends about the number of partners that you observe. The more you observe, the lower is your upper limit. The more certain you are that zero is actually correct. There was a typo in this table with the total, but that's an important typo. It's actually 0.1. If you add all the studies together, this is the last, the 052. If you add all the studies together and do an upper confidence limit, it's 0.1 per 100 person years. So 1 in 1,000. If you observe 1,000 people for 1 year, there might be, at the maximum, it could be zero, the maximum could be one transmission. So the answer now is, it is perhaps true. But this is not for MSM, because all these studies were done mainly on heterosexual couples. And also in the beginning, there was a group from Australia, Wilson and colleagues, who started to look at our argumentation, and they said, we have a relationship between viral load on the basis and the transmission risk. And if we look at the data that we have, insertive penile vaginal contact, we have a line here. And then they argued men having sex with men with receptive penile anal intercourse are 20 times more infectious, or have a 20 times more high risk of transmission. And they just took that line and extrapolated it to here. And then they calculated that the risk is exceedingly high. I mean, they had a really high risk. If I look that up here, the expected value male to male is 4.3 times 10 to the 4. So you would see in 2,000 sexual contexts, single sexual contexts, 2,500, 2,000, you would find one transmission. So that is not what we observe. So something in this mathematical model does not really reflect reality. So how can we estimate this risk? And that's the beginning of the Swiss statement, actually. If something is never observed, can it actually happen? Or can it happen if it is never appears to happen anywhere? So that is a mathematical concept that you can't get around. If you don't observe something, you cannot prove it will not happen. So it can happen. However, the longer you observe, the more observations you add, the less likely it is that it actually can happen. Now, you have seen the studies with their confidence limits, and you keep the numbers in your head. It's about 0.4, in the aggregated slide, 0.1. So one case in 1,000 of partner years. That was per partnership. One in 1,000 partner years. Let's make the calculation on the population that we observe. You all have colleagues, you have maybe patients, and they will report on their sexual activity and they will have partners. I did the calculation. It's a little bit the same we did for the Swiss statement, but it's now adapted. Within Europe and United States, we have about 200,000, it's more than that, men having sex with men who are on treatment. This treatment on average is more than 5 years. And based on the Swiss HIV study data, it might be different, but similar in most cases. About one-third of these MSM have a steady partner. And according to a report by Sullivan, 57% of these men report having sex without condom with their steady partner. And in the same report where they did where they report that the number of sexual acts that was an average per year, 80 sexual acts with their partner. So you can add that up and add the number of sexual contacts among MSM with their HIV negative partner. And then you come to 750,000 sexual exposures or 9,400 partner years. Now the question is, if in one of these 750,000 exposures, when infection occurs, will we see it? That is something we don't know. So let's assume, and that is an assumption, pure assumption, only one in 20 of these cases, and I think that's a low number, only one in 20 will be seen and reported. That makes 5%. And now you can do the calculation. We have zero reported cases. There were no reports. And you divide that by the number of exposures, so which is zero by 750,000, which gives you zero risk. And then again, you can do the upper confidence limit. And this adds up to about 4 in 1 million sexual contacts. So one transmission after 250,000 sexual contacts. That's a lot of sex. And you can calculate that per partner years, as we have seen in the previous studies, and then you come up with 0.03 per 100 partner years. So it's 0.3 in 1,000 or 1 in 3,000 partner years. That is not the risk, but that, based on the observation that I presented to you, that would be the highest risk that could actually happen that we are not observing. This is an estimate, but it shows you that this is even higher. So our observation of not seeing cases in the whole world gives you a higher certainty than all our studies taken together can give us, which was 0.1. And that is a problem. We'll never be better than that. And Dr. DeWitt will afterwards talk about the partner study. All I wanted to show is that in the partner study, they were also separating all sexual contacts. They also gave an upper confidence limit here. You see it 0.4. But there were less frequent reports of anal sex. So the upper confidence limit is higher. Transmission risk was always 0% in all these studies. But the confidence interval, that doesn't mean the risk is that high, but we cannot exclude it's lower than that. We'll hear more about that. So all this taken together informs us that the low transmission risk is confirmed now by ongoing partner studies and 052, et cetera. Now, the criticism would then say, perhaps it's true, but it's not safe enough. So then I would ask these critics, look at HIV transmission by kissing. Do you know how infectious this is? Is kissing not transmitting HIV? And why are you so sure? It's exactly the same that we had with our observation. We don't see transmission of HIV under the situation of treatment, and we are safe enough to inform patients that this is something we don't observe, it's okay. The same was done with 87 with kissing. Nobody criticized that statement. I don't know why. There is no single study that has evaluated the risk of kissing. It's a study you should do. Let's go further. Let's look at other risks. Hepatitis C. We know we have several cases, reported cases of vaginal transmission. We know there's a lot of cases with anal transmission, but the vaginal transmission, there are clear documented cases. But all the CDC's, Swiss recommendations, others say in a steady partnership, it's okay not to use condoms with Hep C because the risk is so low. It's 1%. 1%. It's not 1 in 250,000. So, look at other risks in our daily life. This is from New Zealand, a very well done poll where they looked at non-smokers and their risk of dying of a cardiac attack and the excess risk if their partner is a smoker. And that excess risk, the additional risk of being a passive smoker is one in is mortality of 1 in 600 per year in this age group, 45 to 75. That is compared to what we're talking about. This is a huge risk. We are taking this as nothing. Passive smoking, so what? So the risk is never zero. We cannot say it's zero. But, and we were criticized for saying this, appreciation of the risks differ by different diseases, different situations. And now the question is, how can we communicate low risk? And there I come to the second criticism. It's true, but you shouldn't tell the patients, because this will lead to behavioral disinhibition. Patient will have more sex, will spread the disease whatsoever. Now, what happened actually in Switzerland and also elsewhere, patients were more and more motivated to get treatment. They were more motivated for a better adherence. There is this altruistic adherence. I take the drug because I want to be sure my partner will not be infected. And we have an increase of people on the treatment in the Swiss cohort. It's now 95%. And more than 95% have a fully suppressed viral load. So treatment has become better, not worse. And we have, in the same time, this is true, not only in Switzerland, where the Swiss statement is taken on. We have more and more syphilis cases are increasing all over Europe. But look at the Swiss HIV numbers. In 2008, it peaked in MSM and it dropped. And it also dropped in heterosexuals. So we did not see this anticipated increase. And now for the past 5 years, we have an assay where we can look at recent cases. With the antibody assay, we can say so many percent of the new diagnoses are from recently infected cases. Recent is, in this case, 1 year. And what you see is among MSM, where we invest much, the most of our prevention money, the numbers of recent infections are steadily decreasing. I have already seen the new data projections for 2014, it's continuing going down. So despite all this fear and despite the disinhibition that probably actually did occur, we did not see an incidence, we see the opposite. I think people are motivated to do an excellent adherence treatment. Then if we want to use treatment as, you know, on a global scale, it's very important, the concept of community viral load. We think that the viral load, and here this is, if you take the number of individuals out there with HIV, you multiply that by their blood viral load. So if somebody is fully treatment, doesn't add up to the community viral load, you get the community viral load. And in San Francisco, where this was done, they looked at an increase of treatment, patients under treatment, or percentage of the population under treatment, and they calculate that the community viral load went down. And with the community viral load going down, they also observed a drop in recent or new infections, incident infections. So it seems really to be a concept that not only in Switzerland but also in other countries is working. One thing, issue that I would like to make as a warning, treatment is not the only way to prevent HIV. And this was a mathematical model done by a colleague from Holland with the Swiss data. We just said in 2010, when everything goes the same way, we would see no change in interventions. Our annual number incidence would go up. Then Mission Possible is an activity we did in MSM, or prevention campaigns in MSM, that we think is a lot about testing and behavioral intervention. That would reduce the new cases. If you test and treat in that model, you can only add a little to this intervention. When we would be successful in reducing the behavior to a level in 1996, you would get this red line. And if you get a reduction to the level in 1985, where we had a strong behavioral change, you would get to this reduced risk. So what I want to show you here, behavioral change remains an important part. There's another caveat, that's primary HIV infection. We know that about 50%, in some studies it's 30%, in others it's 50%, that of all new infections occur in clusters. They are linked together. You can find the same virus in many other patients. And it appears that all these recently infected cases, or 50%, are linked to another recently infected patient. So this tells us that a big part of all the transmissions occurs early, maybe in the first half or in the first year of infection. So if you just treat population every year or every 2 years, you will miss a big part of this population. And I will skip for the interest of time a little bit, make it fast, but this was actually modeled by Kimberly, I think is her name, from UNC, with true data from Malawi. And when they looked at, they looked at intervention for chronic HIV cases, you would only get the blue line. The black line is if there is no change. And if you add to the blue line the 75, you would detect and treat 75% of the chronic infection plus 75% of the early infection, you would get the lower line. You can really have an impact. But that is very difficult. And it's important to get the early cases. That's what they want to say. Now, for the future, there are studies undertaken. This is one, probably the biggest one, the PopArt study, also an HPTN study, looking at population art. And they have selected 21 communities with 1 million inhabitants, and it's a cluster randomized. They select communities where they either do a very counseling and testing, plus additional interventions, providing condoms, circumcision, plus treating or offering treatment to everybody, arm A. Second group of communities, 7 communities, would only get the treatment if the 350 CD4 level is reached, and the others would only receive standard information. And the idea is, after 6 years, we will know whether we have an impact of immediate harm. 6 years from now, I'll almost be retired, probably we will see much more effects from what is going on right now with treatment. But I understand randomized controlled trials are the gold standard. It's nice to show it in a randomized way, but I'm also convinced what we showed in just looking at what is going on with the Swiss statement has also some value. So to summarize, ART is the most effective single intervention, but behavioral changes need to also be modified. The quality of the treatment is essential. The knowledge of transmission, as I briefly mentioned, improves the motivation to get treated, because many people now understand that's to my and to my partner's advantage. And it also results in altruistic behavior and altruistic adherence. You take the drug better to save your partner. And early diagnosis is still an obstacle for treatment as prevention, as a concept. And I mentioned the future study. I think they are important. But in the meantime, we will also have to work. So thank you.